Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
God damn it, Ed. We're working here.
Sons of bitches.
This is the Extra Hawk Rate Podcast, episode 608 for the week of March 30th, 2026. I am Iridium Hoarder David T. Cole, and I'm here with Mars Physique Made Easy, Sarah D. Bunting.
Best rubles you'll ever spend.
Mars Bureau NNC intern Tara Arianna.
Finally, a career with a future.
And Elias Pruno Sommelier, David J. Roth.
Oh, that is awful.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. First of all, she's back. It's Sarah D. Bunting. Ooh, welcome back.
Hey.
Sarah.
Hey. The governor of bullshit. Thanks, guys.
You were
thrilled to be here.
Very missed. But also joining Sarah D. Bunting, he is a writer, editor, and co-owner at Defector. You've heard with us many times before. It's David J. Roth.
Oh, my God. Sarah, were you ready to hear that screaming cartoon man? Had you been anxious
yes.
for that?
All right.
He has a name. It is Cheese.
I really was.
Feels like home. We love cheese.
We
Our
do.
Beautiful cheese.
We love cheese. And he loves cereal.
We have gathered not to talk about cheese, but to talk about For All Mankind Season 5. It's 2012 on Mars. Following the uprising in Season 4, workers on the planet are unionized, living with their spouses and raising their kids. These include Kelly Baldwin's son, Alex, now played by Sean Kaufman, who is one of 4 new graduates from, I assume, Mars High School. But while his classmates all have big plans, Alex isn't sure what he wants to do beyond live on Mars forever. And maybe he will if Helios's founder, Dev Iessa, is able to build Maru, a self-sufficient city on the planet. But the M6 nations might get squirrely about devoting more resources to the planet if the Mars peacekeepers can't keep the lid on activist unrest and on other even more serious crimes. The new season premiered with 1 new episode March 27th. We got access to 8 of 10 in the season, but we will be careful about spoilers from future episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. David, should our listeners watch For All Mankind Season 5?
So this is a coward's answer, but if you've been watching For All Mankind, by all means, continue to watch For All Mankind. Mm-hmm. If you were considering starting it, I would not begin here.
That's a very good point. Sarah?
Absolutely correct. You know I would not miss it. I am going to see it through to the very last soul. But yeah, if you haven't started yet, don't. Stay in line. It's fine.
How incomprehensible it would seem if you were just dropping in and be like, I've heard good things. What's going on here?
You did? From whom?
From whom? Oh, the Expos moved?
Yeah, I mean, you have heard good things, but not about this season, probably. Dave?
Yeah, having watched deep into this season, I am sad to report that the show forgot to be as dumb and fun as it has been, and they are not continuing the right trajectory from season 4.
Trajectory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really changed a lot from where it started. It's gotten so much dumber as it's gone on, but I still kind of love it.
Okay. I was low to mid on this season. Mm-hmm. Not that we've watched the whole thing. They've kept a couple back from us.
Yes.
But I just want to share this line I wrote in my notes, just like writing it out. And then after it, I discovered that I had written a Dr. Bronner soap label. So maybe we can start there.
Yeah.
You can't lower the temperature up, up, up. To do otherwise is folly.
All is light. I agree.
But no spoilers. We will not be spoiling what we have seen and experienced. All right, let's.
That was the gist of my criticism of the season is this is a show that started off trying to be real prestige TV, turned into a soap opera, was better for it slash different enough from what they did, but they excelled at both that I enjoyed the way it fell apart.
Yeah.
And now here in season five, they just sort of decided that they weren't going to do that. It wasn't going to be crazier than season four. We weren't going to have even dumber premises laid before us. It sort of just ended up being the non-three boobed part of Total Recall storyline stretched out over eight episodes.
Yeah. It's also, and again, this is not spoiling anything really, but it's gotten into a bit of screamification in that every important character is related to someone that you already know. David, we know this show does not take place in our reality. Is there any single aspect that proves it more than Lily Dale, who is played by Ruby Cruz, going into college for journalism?
It was kind of touching. The idea, like, you know, whatever, the idea of an alternate future. It's a nice thing to think about, but the idea of going to Tulane to study journalism was great, too. The idea of just being like surprised, like the presumably in that reality, the college football program there has also improved surprisingly. And then, yeah, the idea of being able to just step out of there, get a job at it's 2012. So it's not completely ahistorical that you would like go to college and then be like, I got a job. At Gizmodo.
Right.
And then, then you just.
Oh, yes.
And there you are. Seems pretty good for a while. There's another season coming, right? Like, yes. I thought this was going to be it, but they're somehow, yeah, they're going to. So who knows? Maybe we'll get the rise of AI slop stuff and the decline of search driven traffic in the next season.
I was just about to play Gizmodo off Mashable. And now this. Ugh.
Yep. Oh, jeez.
Or it's like President Harryhausen and his troop of skeletons, which is all the people that should be dead in this fucking timeline because they've been in space and their bones are like loofahs now. And yet Ed persists.
Ed persists in a kind of a shambling Joe Biden-esque form. There's a couple of funny bits with him in here where he's like constantly mad about something. He's still Ed, our beautiful Ed. But there's a bit where he's talking to his grandson and the episode kind of like almost pitches his lines down in the mix to signal that the grandson is looking at someone else, thinking about something else. So what you're getting in the background is this kind of like ambient Ed noise. I'm going to be like, sons of bitches, no respect. But like low in the mix, like rumbling static at the bottom of it, which I thought was certainly the funniest thing that happened in this episode. Was the show itself tuning Ed out.
You know when you watch like a behind-the-scenes Lucasfilm documentary and they're showing like the genesis of a character and what inspiration they took from and all that? I imagine they had like a charcoal picture of Ed and somebody just like circle and put Harrison Ford interviews late-night television character. Question mark?
While making Ferdinand the Bull faces, which is still the only thing that he can do under half a metric ton of old age makeup. Yeah. And if someone could explain to me, like, in this reality, like he, as we heard up top, he has this ankle monitor. He was tried in absentia for, like, crimes against the corporate state or whatever. So
meteor hijacking or whatever the actual term. Asteroid jacking.
64-point font criminal is still in an alternate timeline in space, shambling around in Dockers that are not the correct size and a shapeless plaid top thing and then members only jacket over it. Like, shouldn't the climate be controlled in this environment so that he's not having to wear a jacket because old dudes are always cold? I just, like, how is this the aspect of old manitude that persists on the other side of the sliding doors of space show?
It's kind of inspiring in its way. We've harnessed the power. We've used the sun and like nuclear energy to get us to the outer reaches of the cosmos. Like, we're living on Mars, and yet still old guys are wearing like fucked up shirts.
Like, I think he's literally wearing a shirt of my dad's. Like, this, he appears on screen, and I was like, pretty sure Dave Sr. had that on yesterday. Why?
My favorite part of Ed in this season, because he has so much makeup on, he's now become Michael Keaton from Batman, 80s Batman, where he just has to, like, look this way, look that way, like a tank. He actually can't turn his shoulders independent of his neck.
Yes. Spinal fusion body language.
His grandpa name is Poppy. I don't see him as a Poppy.
No.
Not a peepaw either, but just like, call him grandpa. I don't get where Poppy came.
I mean, I know he's supposed to have softened over the years, but he really seems like he would have been the kind of guy that his grandparents call sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. They would make them call him Admiral, for sure.
Admiral.
Admiral. Mm-hmm. The age makeup is, there's a bunch of, you know, choices that the show kind of locked itself into conceptually a long time ago. I think, as you pointed out, David, like before they decided to become the type of show or just became the type of show that they were always going to become. And I don't mind it necessarily where it's like, you know, they put some gray in Coral Pena's hair. She looks great. There's no problem there. Mm-hmm. Poor Ren Schmidt and Joel Kinnaman having to act from inside of the crazy potato head masks that they're wearing is like, I understand like the loyalty to the characters and the concept or something like that. But also like you can just grant them the sweet release of death and let people who can use their faces play the parts that are pivotal in the show.
Yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Met.
Yeah.
Heads do not weigh as much as this makeup. I've given this a lot of thought.
Mm. Well, speaking of that, I assume the producers started writing the season before they knew you were already on board because they wrote in a murder mystery just to hook you, I guess. Sweet.
There are parts of it that, like, this is why I can't quit this show, even though I get the sense I haven't watched that far into this season yet because I need to put it on pause until Dan can catch up and watch with me. This is a family poke fun at it show in our house, but there does definitely seem to be the sense that they have no longer, they're going back to taking themselves super seriously, but without any courage of their demented plotting convictions. Like, where is the show that strapped Kelly to an air conditioner and shot her into orbit? Yeah. I want that show, Kelly and the Friedrich, part one. Fine. That's sort of the thing. It's like every now and then, these actors are all like Joel Kinnaman, most boring man on earth, excepted like I love Margot and I love Ren Schmidt's performance. And I just every now and then see a glimmer of like the interesting show that this could have been if it was willing to step through all the plotting that was necessary to make it credible instead of going kind of bonkers and trying to like headline chase, I guess, in the Law and Order rip from the headline style. Mm-hmm. The ways in which it's maddening are like fascinating and funny also. So I will always stick with it. And there's not much longer to go.
You're absolutely right about the lack of those great milestones. Like, you know, where is the space Darings do in season five? And then on the other side, where is the power dynamics of space base, wherever they happen to be this season? That sort of is in the background here, too, or is not as pronounced, not as angry, as loud. So you just don't get that sort of bonkers dynamics that we have seen season three, season four. All power to the people with this, you know, let's unionize the Mars workers storyline, but just get to it. You know, like I felt like we watched that pilot of The Expanse. This whole season felt like half that episode where it's like, we get it. People on Mars are far away from home. They don't have a lot of leverage and they're having a hard time forming a union, acting as one entity. Got it. Let's go. Let's move. Yeah.
Wrap someone in duct tape and shove them out the airlock. Yeah. Let's fucking go.
Because that guy, the guy, and I forget his name, Tara, help me out, but the dad who used to be a miner, now he is
Miles.
The bodega king.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Toby Kebbell.
He cannot be leading that part of the storyline.
Like, no,
that character
so
is not interesting. That performance is very oatmeal. And they spend so much time there this season. And it's just like, we can do Turk 183 or whatever the hell it was at home. We don't need it in space.
Wow. A Turk 182 reference?
Yeah.
And it wasn't me making it?
Super.
You're welcome. Oh. Welcome back, Sarah.
Yep. You missed months of Robert Urich chat and now it's time to get caught up. The thing that I was wondering about with it, I imagine. The sci-fi stuff, I know that this is, like, as a genre, I'm not as familiar with it. And I have friends who read it, and sometimes there is this obsession with like weird details that I wouldn't find very interesting, where they're sort of like, they're doing the telemetry. You're watching them do math. As a reader, that is the experience that you're getting. And as someone who's like been in, you know, situations where we like organized a newsroom or whatever, being there for the early middle stages of a unionization campaign is just, it's not the sort of like itch that I want scratched. Like I'm not missing it, you know, like, if it's like, all right, well, I guess we'll have another meeting in 10 days. Does anyone have any conflicts? And then like two people have conflicts.
So somebody from the back tells 10 soul units. We're on Mars.
I am that person.
I do agree that the thing that they seem like they had gotten right, and I'm disappointed is not, I only watched pilot, but or the first episode, but the bit that I'm disappointed there isn't more of is that it does seem like as they were kind of like backing themselves into that cul-de-sac of having some of the main drama of the story be administrative, you know, derring do, they also did get crazier with the space shit last year. And I, as silly as the show is, and we are also, I think, in a similar pattern as the Bunting household on this one, where it's like we watch it and we're kind of like hooting with delight at how goofy it is and then clapping our flippers together whenever there's cool space stuff happening. Uh-huh. Like, it's not a very sophisticated, I'm not like in the prestige part of my brain watching this. I'm,
sure,
but no. But if you're not going to give me my space treats, like if you're not going to eject someone through an airlock for reasons having to do with like really important matters of life or death, then that's like kind of the silo without any of the lore or something. Like it's just like cops and robbers in a space station is, that's a fucking drag to me, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really where it winds up.
Yeah. So that would be my answer to Tara's question. Also, that it's like, okay, like these people have done murder mystery programming together before, you know, the MPK lead detective, but it's all like such familiar procedural beats that it's like this investigator who's like getting above her station trying to solve this murder and nobody's listening to her. And it's like, just because it's on Mars doesn't mean we haven't seen this 78 times just on Dick Wolf shows last week.
Yeah.
There's no space twist to it either. It's just like, oh, the guy was found dead. The only difference between this was like, it was basically the scene from Chinatown where they go to the morgue and the guy's like, he had water in his lungs. So it's like, this place is dry as a desert. How do you have, you know, it was basically that except oxygen.
Right.
And that was like the only difference. There was no more, you know, space razzmatazz about that whole thing. But the other thing that struck me about where they're centering this story, which is inside the base with the workers, is that the base is so boring and looks so cheap because in the real world, they're just a bunch of storage containers stuck together. It's basically Mars Tinker Toy. And it is so evenly lit as a building standard, construction standard, that it just looks super cheap. It looks like one of those syndicated sci-fi shows from the 90s or early 2000s. And it really took me back how cheap it was, because the show is many things, but it never looked cheap until this season. And I maybe it's because of the setting, but I thought that was sort of a bad call as well.
Yeah.
And, well, and speaking about the base, sorry, just while I'm on the base, did it strike anybody else as odd is that throughout the Mars base era of this TV show, there are no things on the base, high school mascots, store signs that have a Martian or say Martian or alien on it. Like somebody would lean into it, right?
Yeah. We've been to Roswell. We know that Martian shit is on everything.
We all went to schwa.com back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We know.
Yeah. Well, Star City is coming between the end of this season and season 6 of For All Mankind, which will be the final one. So I'm hoping that it goes far enough back in the history that it can sort of restart the kind of prestige-y aspects of this franchise. In a way that, you know, subsequent to, I'll say, season 3 seasons of For All Mankind have not really done.
How hard would they have to work and how much would you enjoy it if they managed to work Ed into that storyline?
Oh my God, they should.
He just walks in. What are you sons of bitches doing here? You're in Russia, sir. What?
So Star City is the like the sequel, not sequel, but it's like a spinoff. It's like the Russia side of things.
Yes.
Super. That's great.
Yeah.
I will say this, that it's like, as much as the show is like variable, and I think we're all kind of like talking around the same thing, which is like, I like it, but it's not good. And like, I also don't, I don't like it as much as I feel like I should. I want to give some points to Tim Apple of Apple Plus. Yeah. For this clearly being, like, not to say that he's not a chud like all the other billionaires that have bent the knee in the last few years. Mm-hmm. That said, the man clearly finds this idea very appealing. And the fact that he's not doing the, like, Jeff Bezos Washington Post thing, and he's just like, all right, how about another season? Mm-hmm. Why don't you upload Ed's consciousness into a computer so he can always be on the show? Like, all the, but yeah. He's committed to making an expensive TV show that is visibly deteriorating from one episode to the next. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's sticking with it, all too little of that in the culture at the moment. Oh, I guess you got to tentatively tip your cap.
Dave, if we could build a robot helper of the future that was powered by Ed AI.
Powered by Ed.
Oh my God. So good. Hey, Domino's exists in space on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Saw that.
Closest to the pin wins. Mm. 30 minutes or free is how long on Mars? Because it's not 30 minutes.
16?
Mm-mm. Oh, this is 44?
34?
34. Okay.
Wait, is it slower or fast? It would be slower, I feel like. Let's say 50 minutes.
30 minutes, 50 seconds.
Is, wow.
Really? Yeah.
Okay.
So you gain 50 seconds when you compare 30 minutes and
just
30 minutes.
Just like us. Mm-hmm. I do like the Domino's being there as part of the... Because like I feel like all the stuff that you were describing aesthetically is like, it sucks up there. Like, it stinks. It's boring. Mm-hmm. It looks bad. Mm-hmm. And like the idea that they're just sort of like... it's sort of a hat on the hat to be like, and they've got Domino's. But it, but it's a funny little kicker all the same.
With like the West Elm bedding in their hexagonal... Yeah. Metal cube, storage cube, apartment
space
unit.
What this season needed was sort of like a webisodes idea where they'll have episode one and then this 1.5 and then two, 2.5. Is episode 1.5 is about the battle between Domino's and Pizza Hut and who gets the Mars license franchise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, have we created garlic dipping sauce? Why do they even put a pepperoncini in there? It's useless.
Well, every time they showed anything about food or anyone's kitchen in their habs, which is what their apartments are called.
Oh.
How bad does it smell in there if you can never open a window?
You know it smells crazy in there.
You know it smells crazy in there.
Tara has become obsessed with house burping over the past few months, and it's really annoying.
We live somewhere where it's hot all the time. Anytime I can open a window, it's like, it feels like a blessing.
Yeah.
Seriously, now I'm thinking of like if you burn the microwave popcorn, literally the entire base is living with that recirculated for like 14, 15 souls.
Yeah. Listen, there are brutal. North Korean refugees living there that got there in crates. You know they're making kimchi. You know they're pickling. Anyway,
fermenting in
space chinko.
One of the features of every season premiere of the show is a big montage of everything that is the same and different in this timeline. And I took some highlights and I put them in our doc. Does everyone have a favorite alt history bullet point from that opening montage? I'll go first. One is that Breaking Bad still happens because that tells us even in this extremely optimistic timeline, they still don't have socialized medicine in America because otherwise Breaking Bad would make no sense. David J. Roth.
A lot of competitors here. We discussed before we came on that it's great to learn that Ricky Bobby exists in this future.
Yeah.
Even though George W. Bush was never president, I have some issues there. But the one for me, they loaded up this montage with baseball shit. None of it of any great moment to me. My favorite is the cover of, I guess it's like a Time magazine cover that's like, the Montreal Expos are moving to Portland, Oregon, which is just, I don't know that that would have made it into the issue, period, let alone have like been on the cover with a picture of a young Pedro Martinez next to it, but really appreciate that bit of fan service.
Sarah.
Somewhere, Danny McEachran like knew that that was crossing a screen, sat bolt upright for reasons unknown to him and was like, God damn it. Then moved to Vancouver Wash. My favorite was that former President Ted Kennedy died of a brain tumor at age 77, and his nephew, JFK Jr., was in the rumor mill for a presidential bid, which, like, it wouldn't have been rumored. It would have 100% happened. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think about, especially watching Love Story last month or so, I often wonder what that alternate universe would look like, that Kennedys would be back in the White House. And this is a bone that this show has worried in these alternate timeline jumps almost every season. So mm-hmm. it's kind of fun to think about.
Dave.
They had one about Blockbuster having a franchise on the moon, which I think maybe we even saw on a earlier season. Feels like they might have done that. But I feel like the play there should have been Blockbuster buys like 1 year old startup DVD delivery system, Netflix. That mm-hmm. would have been the play.
Or many Cosmo, reasons. So that you can get ice cream. Also, RIP.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
Misty Wilson Ball sound drop.
Who is he?
Jesus Christ. So many people are asking who...
New listeners. Who
new
knows?
Listeners are like, who the fuck is this? Who's this guy?
Who's the tired guy? Who's your tired friend?
Who's this genius?
It is our Around the Dial segment, talking about stuff we watch on TV. Not necessarily new TV, but let's see what we got. Tara, you're first.
Well, I watched the first episode of SNL UK, premiered in the UK on March 21st, and then it subsequently dropped on Peacock here in America. I don't know what I was expecting. This is just Saturday Night Live in the UK with all that that implies. And considering the show's been in development since 2021 and announced a season order almost one full year ago, it's incredible how tired it feels immediately coming out of the gate, like as if it's been on for 50 seasons like the main show has. I almost turned it off in the monologue. I didn't, but I got mad. Host Tina Fey does the very expected thing of taking questions from plants in the audience. The first plant is Nicola Coughlan, the Kumail Nanjiani of Europe, in that I just need to see her less. Then Michael Cera, and then Graham Norton, whose studio they're shooting SNL UK in, and he joins Fey on stage. And to set her up to be likable to British people, he quizzes her on her knowledge of British comedy, and we get this clip one.
What about AbFab?
Oh, sweetie, darling, you're just a little shop girl, darling.
Keeping up appearances.
Richard!
Oh, Monty Python.
That is an ex-parrot!
Fawlty Towers.
Nobody mentioned the war!
Are you being served?
My pussy is like an alarm clock.
Reggie Perrin.
I didn't get where I am today by waffling.
Deep cut, Monty Python.
We lived in Shoebox in Middle of Road.
Four Yorkshiremen is not a deep cut. They divoted live at the Hollywood Bowl. That is entry-level Monty Python. Anyway, the wigs are much poorer quality. They have not totally nailed the boom mic either, which is weird since everyone's wearing hairline mics like on Broadway. This was the one joke in the whole episode that made me laugh. It's the initial commercial parody right after the monologue. Clip two.
And now I've found it. The anti-aging cream that works so well. Everyone will think your husband is a nonce.
She's my wife! She's a grown woman!
Shut your mouth! You made me sick.
That's the wife winking. Anyway, it just goes on like that. It's kind of a funny idea. I intended to also watch the second episode, which was hosted by Jamie Flatline Dornan, but I could not bring myself to, so sorry. But you can find it on Peacock if you want. Instead, I watched a wonderful new special from a former SNL America writer, Color Theories by Julio Torres. This show started as an off-Broadway production. It was staged last year and filmed for HBO. It's impossible to summarize except that it's an even more esoteric comic vision than what Torres presented in his previous HBO special, My Favorite Shapes. The overarching idea is that navy blue is the color of rules and pointless bureaucracy. For example, he says, airports are navy blue energetically and also sometimes literally. He opens by saying Ellen DeGeneres, whom he calls my peer Ellen, presented herself as yellow, the color of joy, but then we all found out she was actually red, the color of anger. He goes on tangents about the moods of different colors. Most male movie stars, for example, are orange because they're exciting but not dangerous. Since white is the color of knowledge, all children are pink, a combination of red and white, because they're mad, but we know why. And occasionally he's kept on track by Bebo, the robot that we got to know in Phantasmus a couple of years ago. And even though I think Torres would say he is his best self when he is in a green mode, the color of nature, it's pretty obvious his actual favorite color is purple. Clip three.
Purple is when red gets to make fun of navy blue. Purple is the color of mystery. Purple is the color of intrigue. It's different than lilac. Lilac is being a mom. Purple is being a stepmother. Lilac is, honey, dinner's ready. Purple is locking her in the tower. Purple is this sentence that we have all encountered a million times, but for some reason is worded in this very purple way. Objects in the mirror. May be closer than they appear. Why did that make that so purple? And if you're gonna make it that purple, write it in cursive and have it glow.
He goes on to say that Barbara Streisand and her oeuvre are not purple, but her continually cloning her dog and then taking the dog to the original dog's grave is very purple behavior. So that just gives you an idea of where it's going.
But the thing is about all his theories is that they all seem very correct and true in a way that, of course, you cannot prove. But he's explaining how navy blue is the color of airports, and airports are like, whatever your deal is, not here.
Yeah.
And that's how they're navy blue. It's like, yeah, all right. Yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
We're all homogenized at the airport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we got to the end of this. All I could say is, what a mind. I stand by that. So go watch it. It's on HBO Max. Very good. And for my plug, The Comeback is back for its third and final season, also on HBO. And I interviewed Dan Bukatinski, who is a star on it. He plays Billy, Valerie's now manager, formerly publicist, and is also an executive producer on the show. And we talked about that at Decider. We'll link that in the show notes.
All right, Mr. David J. Roth, what do you have for us?
This is one that you all have talked about, and I think you've probably seen more of it than me, but my wife and I have been watching DTF St. Louis on HBO, and we're digging it in the same way and with the same caveats that I loved Patriot. I did not watch Universal Grace Limited or something like that? Or
Perpetual what's it called? Grace Limited.
Perpetual Grace Unlimited. That's right. What you just said. But I think Stephen Conrad's a really interesting maker of television, and the show, which I was initially kind of skeptical about, terribly uninterested before I knew that it was Stephen Conrad, the idea of just like, we put a boosted suit on David Harbour and Jason Bateman is acting like Jason Bateman. Like, I was ready to move on. It is as much a Stephen Conrad thing as it could possibly be, for good and for ill. I mean, I think like, I remember Patriot very fondly, although I think if I were to go back and like watch it all again, it's like 70% good or like 65% good. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there that I think they kind of lost me with. In this case, he is taking chances, but it's just going to be, I assume, this one season. It is extremely stylized and extremely well acted and well cast. As much as I love the Patriot team, and I think like Kurtwood Smith, especially in that, is like one of the great TV performances for me. Richard Jenkins belongs in the Stephen Conrad verse so much.
Yep.
And seeing him in here doing his thing is great. The woman that plays opposite him, who I gather is in Wednesday, which I have not seen, is also super good. And so there's like really pleasing performances, really like intentional, stylish filmmaking. Like, I don't know where it's going yet, and I'm prepared to be, you know, kind of underwhelmed by whatever is revealed storytelling wise.
Mm-hmm.
But just from one moment to the next, it's a pleasure to watch and listen to, and I'm into that.
Are you caught up? Are you at episode five?
We're four is the next one we're gonna watch. We were away for a minute.
So without giving anything away, the thing I like about this show so far, and this has been true up to episode five, is that every episode takes a turn to the point where by episode five, it sort of turned back into itself at the start, except it's one level up, you know, like it's a staircase going up, and yet just like they're doing a turn every episode. It's like, oh, I think it's about this. It's gone from a character piece to a murder mystery in episode one, and then like da 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 da. And by episode five, we're sort of like back to some sort of like character interactions that I'll just call feel good. And it sort of feels like it's sitting on top of the mood of episode one, but so much has happened in the meantime. And I thought that was a interesting construction. And I thought it was very, very pleasing for such a small story.
I'm just glad he's getting the chance to cook with it, because this feels like, and I think that if you were to have him write and direct anything, like, it would look good. And again, like, it looks intriguing and it looks expensive in that way that like HBO is basically the last place doing, as far as I can tell. But it is also like you, I think that is a very good observation in terms of just like how much extra work he's doing in a sort of Stephen Conrad mode. Much appreciated.
Good well, because when we talked about it earlier, I was like, oh, this is his White Lotus. And I'm like, after a couple more episodes, I was like, oh, no, it's not. They no. they turned around and
it's
now
make
it's
seven episodes of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I really want to get a, like a whole handful of moisturizer and just rub it into Jason Bateman's face for like 2 hours. Makes me want to do that a lot.
Yeah, this is as craggy as you could, because he still kind of looks like he's 15. Like he radiates that energy, but yeah, this
Except
is a man
around,
that does
around the edges.
Yeah, does not wear sunblock when he's on his recumbent bike.
The Hans Molman of DTF St. Louis. Yeah,
just like a peanut.
Dave, what's going on in the Defector universe?
You know, Defector type stuff. The closest I could come to a story of mine to plug on here would be, and this is kind of, it's like a bummer that this story was not covered by 1,000 websites in exactly the same way. It's just because we don't have enough websites.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Do
but
you?
Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, yep. The story of, I mean, he has a name, but we can just call him Reacher, beating up a neighbor that started a fight with him, insisted on getting beat up by Reacher in the suburbs of Nashville, Tennessee. I got to write about that, and it was... Sometimes I get to write about baseball, and sometimes I write about things of great national import, and then sometimes I write about a weird guy in the suburbs of Nashville seeing Alan Richson coming down the street on a motorcycle and being like, I'm a punch him.
As Tara says, I live on a different internet. I have no idea what you're talking about. Sounds intriguing. Can we bullet point this for
sure.
me?
Happy to do it. Alan Richson, star of Amazon's Reacher, lives in a fancy, super fancy suburb of Nashville. He and his kids were riding their motorcycles around the completely empty streets of this development when a neighbor got mad at them for doing it, flipped them off. Richson flipped them off back. The next day, they were riding around again, and the neighbor charged out of his driveway, jumped in front of Richson's motorcycle, to the point where he fell off of it. And then was screaming at him and putting his finger in his chest and calling him a fucking lunatic until eventually Richson did shove him to the ground. Then the guy tried to fight him. Then Richson hit him a few times. We know all of this because the guy went to TMZ afterwards to tell his story. And then Richson...
after picking himself up with a sponge? Okay.
Seriously?
Yeah, after he was initially turned into a fine pink mist and then reconstituted like a T-1000. And the or whatever number Robert Patrick was. I don't remember all the numbers. But then Richson, who was wearing like a GoPro or some shit, like released footage that refuted the guy's initial account. It's the only TMZ story I've ever seen that has an update correcting the information below atop it.
Wow.
Great shit.
It's real good.
American story.
Do we suspect it was like a suicide by Reacher situation?
That's a really good question. Yeah. It feels like what I wrote in the blog is that it's basically like end stage suburban brain disease.
Yeah.
But like this is like a guy who's like, whatever, getting testosterone from a website on the internet and he's just jamming it in his thigh and then decided that he was going to take his chance.
Yeah.
Standing in front of a man the size of an armoire and telling him to slow down on his motorcycle.
I'm very pleased that you included this Blue Sky post from past and future guest Patrick Monahan. Town bully noticing Reacher. Who's this? Your boyfriend? Reacher blotting out sign. No, comma.
So good.
Anyway, we'll link to that into your author page on Defender.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll move on to Sarah D. Bunting. What do you got for us? Been a while.
Well, over the holiday. Remember the holiday? I had a grand plan to jump my husband, Dan, into a handful of shows to see if he would like them or if I should just go about my business on my own, including The Lowdown. We polished that off very quickly. I like rewatched the first three. They held up. We're pretty much in agreement as a household. Loved it. Can't wait for the second season. Almost immediately started a Reservation Dogs watch and powered through most of two seasons in like 3 days. But the Lowdown finale was really not believable at all. Spoilers aho if you have not gotten around to finishing that season yet. But this federal government raiding a white supremacist church compound in the middle of the landmass and making arrests? I don't think so. The Donald Washburg we watched for 7 episodes growing a soul and turning over the land to the Osage Nation because it's what his brother would have wanted? I don't think so. Everyone gathered around the old cafe counter, telling more stories and chuckling fondly. Okay, maybe that part. but it's really a testament to how well The Lowdown built its world and how surely the characters drove the story in the first season, that because you feel like you know these people and they're imperfect and maddening in a way that is very credible, you want things to work out for your friends in the electronic box, and you are willing to let slide the fact that as of the end of the seventh episode, shit was getting so naturalistically dark, navy blue, you might say, in terms of the moral and administrative corruption at work, that it really was not possible for any of the protagonists to pull it back from a legit, everyone is compromised and nobody can win or live noir ending. But somehow the good guys win or don't die, and I'm fine with it. Outstanding performances all around. Please put Killer Mike in everything or give that character a spinoff. That his eye patches matched his shirts is a novella. You can get at least two episodes out of that. The Lowdown is on the Rushmore of used bookstore-centric TV shows and films as well. I do not say that lightly. For my plugs, I wrote a thing last week about the Sopranos IRL true crime connections. I will link that in the show notes. I will also be getting a tattoo of that Braylon Mullins kid who plays for UConn on my face because he defeated evil. I will not be taking any questions, but my real plug coming out of the Northeast is the medical and elder carers at Overlook Medical Center, Bright Star, and honestly, around the world. Thank you guys for everything you do. You don't get paid enough, any of you, but if you think that nobody sees you and your value, I do. My family does. Parade forthcoming.
All right. Very briefly, I want to talk about Last One Laughing UK. Season 2 is out. I can't really say what I laughed at so fucking hard. I thought I was going to die. But there is a moment with Diane Morgan, a.k.a. Philomena Kunk, where she has to perform what on the show they called The Joker, which is basically just a performance that she has planned to try to make other people, other fellow comedians in the UK laugh, which is the whole point. You laugh, you're out. I died 12 times watching this. It was so funny. It's the hardest I've laughed at something on television in a long time. She is doing a dramatic reading of Do Not Go Gently Into That Night, and it just killed me. If you haven't watched this, I think if you like Taskmaster, it's in that sort of, it's a panel show, but not quite really UK sort of bucket. Seek that out. You can watch just that clip. And I don't want to play the clip here because so much of it is the reactions of her fellow panelists, them trying not to laugh. And people trying not to laugh is inherently funny. And then on top of that is her performance, and it just absolutely destroyed me.
Is that the one where at the end of it, Bemmy, like,
yeah, there's a whale.
Cries out in pain?
Okay. Yes, yes, that is the one.
Great.
So high recommend on that one. All right. Here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. We're going to be talking about Dear Killer Nannies. And that's about Pablo Escobar's assassin nanny force. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. That is available to club members. Go to our club page at extrahotgreat.com/club for more information and to sign up. And then come back here next week, EHG Prime. We're welcoming him back, Alison Herman, to talk about the Testaments. Oh, goody. More Handmaid's Tale stories.
But now in purple and not the kind of purple that Julio Torres told us about.
Do you think they have something for every color of the rainbow there in Gideon?
Yes.
Okay.
And what annoyed me is that in the book, they describe the Okana wives, which are like, they're sort of in a medium area of, I guess, power. But their costumes are striped. And we never see that on the show. And it really bugged me. Mm. Missed opportunity.
Okay. All that coming at you soon. It's been a little while since we heard the music of our Tiny Triumph section, but I have one. Apparently, I made Netflix's upcoming miniseries, The Kennedys, happen. At some point in our past, I was talking about, I have a project idea for you people out there at Netflix. The Crown is over. How about the American Crown? If we're going to do the American Crown, it's got to be about the history of the Kennedys throughout time. Mm-hmm. You start with evil Joe Kennedy Sr. and you go from there. And that's what they're doing.
They are.
They got Michael Fassbender playing him. They've got Toby Huss playing FDR.
Is that true?
Oh, boy. Yes.
Oh, man. Yep.
They got Wyatt Russell playing Charles Lindbergh in this thing.
Okay.
Make me watch this shit. I have ethical qualms with its existence, and yet these are three performers that I would absolutely yeah. watch.
Yeah. That I would parts. Watch do something on the surface of a volcano.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. Based on the book JFK, Coming of Age in the American Century, 1917 to 1956. So I feel like we're getting generational stories here. So I just wanted to say, everybody, you're welcome.
Thanks, Dave.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon, presenting this week, it's Tara. Tara, what do you got?
Well, I'm talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and over the years, that show had its problems. Flat soda chemistry between Jake and Amy, increasingly outlandish season finale cliffhangers, calling defense attorneys evil. None of those come into play in season 5, episode 14, The Box, and this is why I think you should all induct it into the canon. Number one, the episode premise is catnip for Homicide fans. In the 90s, everyone who wasn't already in the know about the Juilliard-trained Andre Brower from his years doing Shakespeare in the Park got on board as soon as they saw him playing Detective Frank Pemberton in Homicide, Life on the Street, or I guess I should say, if they saw him playing Pemberton in Homicide, because NBC made that very difficult. Pemberton can be arrogant, but he actually does have the talent to back it up, and his interrogations of suspects are probably what viewers remember best about the show. Brooklyn Nine-Nine's Captain Raymond Holt is about as different a TV cop character as Brower could ever choose to play, so by the time we got to the 5th season, the Homicide fans in the audience had probably given up hoping for a Homicide homage, and then bam! Second encore, just kidding, episode 14. The first moments of the cold open cut back and forth from a man walking into the squad room and Jake staging the interrogation room to receive him. The suspect, played by the great Sterling K. Brown, is a dentist Jake thinks killed his business partner, Robert Tupper. As Philip waits in the interrogation room, Holt joins Jake on the cops-only side of the glass. Clip one.
Jacked up the thermostat, got the table all sticky, made one of the chair legs too short, and worst of all, I had Gina greet him.
What did you have her do?
Be yourself.
Poor son of a bitch.
Yeah. Why are you wearing a tuxedo?
Kevin and I are attending the opera.
Ooh, the opera. Is it the one Bugs Bunny sings?
Yes. So, who's this?
This is Philip Davidson.
What do we have on him?
Clear motive, clear means, and a non-existent alibi, but the DA won't bring a charge because he says it's all circumstantial. If we want to bring this guy down, we have to get him to confess right here, right now.
An interrogation with a ticking clock and everything on the line? I better call Kevin and tell him I won't be attending the opera. There's someone else I'd rather hear sing.
Oh, damn!
Hello, Kevin. I won't be joining you at the opera
tonight. The phone already.
The tickets are under my name. H-O-L.
oh, boy, we're going to see an Andre Brower character questioning a suspect again! Clip two.
Peralta, do you know what I miss most about being a detective? A good interrogation. Breaking suspects down. Talking quietly and then talking real loud. Looking away and then looking right in their eyes. Leaning.
That the character seems as excited for his interrogation as we are to watch him adds to the fun. Number two, the episode leaves no interrogation joke unjoked. Once you decided to make a bottle episode revolving around an interrogation room and the few square feet of police station space that surround it, you could just focus on a cop methodically and meticulously pursuing a single interrogation technique. But why would you when the star of the episode is one of the most versatile actors of his generation? Brower, not Sandberg, although Sandberg is also good. Jake starts in a very conventional way, asking Philip if he was the last person to see Robert alive. Philip smoothly says the person who killed him did and is unflapped when Jake thinks he's caught him lying about what they met to discuss the day Robert was killed. Yes, Philip knows Robert's calendar has a note about missing meds because the reason they were meeting about firing an office assistant named Cheryl is that they suspected she was stealing diazepam, Philip says. Holt, hanging back, cracks up at Jake, thinking he really had Philip with that, and after a few more beats of mockery, Jake pulls him out. Clip 3.
I'm executing a strategy.
Oh, really? And what strategy might that be? Make Jake feel like an idiot? Or make Jake feel self-conscious about his Adams family-themed wedding vows rap?
No, I want Philip to underestimate you and fear me. I'll badger him with my superior intellect while simultaneously belittling you. Once Philip dismisses you as a threat, I'll leave you alone with him and he'll let his guard down.
If I didn't know any better, I would say you're describing smart cop, dumb cop.
Look, I thought you had him on the calendar reveal, but it was a step ahead. You got flustered and I realized in the moment we could use this to our advantage.
So what do you want me to do? Ask stupid questions?
Stupid questions, grammatical errors, lose your train of thought, just ask them to confess. Ooh, relate everything back to those movies you've seen.
Kind of seems like a shot at me about Die Hard, but okay.
This is not a comment on you, Peralta. I just want to bring this guy down.
Yeah, that's all I want to. And to possibly say, you can't handle the tooth. You know, if it comes up naturally.
It won't.
It might.
I actually think it can't. So what do you say?
Me want to. Dumb cop.
When Holt steps out as planned, Jake rapid fires questions, clip 4.
What kind of car did Robert drive? Also, Dana from the bar, what color was her hair? And which night does the cleaning crew sterilize your office? And have you ever been up to where the body was found? And when you left your phone at the office, was it plugged into your computer or an outlet? And did you kill him? And what did your cab driver look like?
This seems like a huge waste of time, but here you go. Robert drove a Saab, Dana's hair was blonde and sterilized on Wednesdays and Saturdays. I haven't been to Vernon in 20 years. The phone was plugged into the wall. No, I didn't kill him, and the cab driver had a beard and an earring. I'm sorry I didn't get his license number.
Wow. Very impressive.
Yeah.
You didn't fall for my did you kill him gambit.
No.
Although it is interesting that you knew the body was found in Vernon, New York, when that information hasn't been released to the public.
Well, hello, Dolly.
But Philip has an answer for that, too. Robert's wife told him about Vernon, and Holt tells Jake on the other side of the glass that Philip's uncle confirmed he hasn't been to his cabin in months, nor spoken to Philip in a year. Jake has another idea. Clip 5.
I convince him I'm unstable. I run in there screaming. I throw a chair through the two-sided mirror. Glass goes everywhere. He's like, if Mad Dog Peralta will do that, who knows what else he's capable of?
No offense, but you don't get angry well.
What? That's not true. Remember how angry I got about how fast Daenerys got from Dragonstone to North of the Wall? That was intense.
You have a boyish face and a big goofy grin. It's like being yelled at by a children's cereal mascot.
Hey, some of those are scary. Count Chocula much?
Invading Philip's personal space just ends with Philip diagnosing some issues with Jake's oral health. The failure of this gambit leads to Holt's next notion, clip 6.
Doctor, it's funny when people call dentists doctor.
We are doctors. We do 4 years of medical school.
That was called dental school.
But we learn about the entire body.
Yeah, but if you had cancer, you can call a dentist.
You know, it's actually harder to get into dental school than medical school.
Well, because there are fewer dental schools. Because most people want to become actual doctors.
That's ridiculous. It's not like we're college professors calling ourselves doctors.
It's not the same thing, my friend.
Well, sure it is. When someone has a heart attack on a plane, do they yell out, yo, does anybody here have an art history PhD?
A PhD is a doctorate. It's literally describing a doctor.
Maybe let's refocus.
No, the problem here is that medical practitioners have co-opted the word doctor.
Okay, Captain.
Now, I know we live in a world where anything can mean anything, and nobody even cares about etymology. Apparently, that's a trigger for me.
Yeah.
And then to this one, which Holt delegates to Jake, clip 7.
Look your dead friend in the eyes and say his name.
Robert.
Okay, maybe say his full name.
Robert Tupper.
His middle name's Henry.
Robert Henry Tupper.
His wife called him Rob. Work that in.
Rob Tupper.
Work it into the full name.
Robert Rob Henry Tupper.
Now say it with a frown on your face.
Robert Rob Henry Tupper.
Now try not to blink so tears come into your eyes.
Robert Rob Henry Tupper.
Man, this guy is a good murderer.
After Jake's attempt to play guitar at Philip while screaming yields no result, Philip tries turning Jake against Holt, clip 8.
Why'd he make you dumb cop?
He didn't make me dumb cop, not that it's any of your business. We agreed on it as a strategy.
Right? Well, why wasn't he dumb cop?
Please, you never would have bought that.
What?
It's just that between the two of us, you were more believable as
dumb.
Yes, dumb. The dumber of two smart options.
Wow, rough.
All right, that's enough. You're not interrogating us. We're interrogating you.
Exactly. Tell us about the diazepam. If Cheryl didn't take it, then who did? Because we're pretty sure it was you.
Honestly, it could have been any one of our employees. They all have access to the storage room. You know, it's silly, but I trust the people who work for me.
I'm telling you, Captain Holt is only in here because I want him here.
Really?
Are you in charge? And all those strategies you've been coming after me with, those were all your ideas?
I mean, the guitar thing was mine.
And you signed off on that?
Oh. Seriously?
Ooh, this is sad.
Shut up.
I just feel bad for you.
I said shut
up. Your boss thinks you're an idiot. That can't feel good.
All right, listen, you son of a bitch. You think you're smarter than us? You think you've gotten away with it? You haven't. We're gonna find something, one skin cell, one eyelash, one tiny inconsistency in your story, and you're gonna spend the rest of your life in prison. Everyone who loves you will leave, and you will die alone, and at that time, it will be your head that a bear has sex with.
I'm pretty sure you're going for angry, but in my mind, it just seems like when a Muppet gets upset, this starts going angry.
Oh, you want angry? I'll show you angry!
So that's Jake throwing a chair at the two-way mirror, which then bounces off, hitting Jake in the face. It does not knock any sense into Jake, at least at first. He strolls in with a straight-up fictional eyewitness report from the Vernon PD, except Philip's uncle only has one neighbor and he's been dead for 3 years. Finally, Philip calls his attorney, Elaine, the great Romy Rosemont, but Jake is determined to keep Philip in the box for every last second he is legally entitled to. Holt bemoans Jake going to these recklessest dreams just so everyone would know how smart he is. Jake replies that he only wanted to prove that to Holt, which leads Jake to an epiphany, clip 9.
I'm Philip, a successful periodontist that's become addicted to diazepam, a sedative I take because I'm junky scum. Also, for real, addiction is a disease I would be super empathetic if you hadn't murdered a man.
What is the point of this?
I'll get there. So, one day I'm working late when my boss Robert surprises me. He found out I was stealing meds. Again, junky scum. Also again, not your fault, there's a major genetic component to addiction. He says he's gonna file a police report. I could lose my license. We fight and something in me just snaps. So I grab the first thing I can find and I hit him with it.
You still have no murder weapon.
I do now. Here's a pic I found on Yelp of the surgical suite 6 months ago, and here's a shot that our crime scene photographer took of the same room 2 weeks after the murder. Notice any differences?
We're not answering that.
That's all right, I can just tell you myself. The Yelp shot has 6 of these heavy-looking glass awards from the Brooklyn Periodontic Society in the background, whereas this shot only has 5. What happened to number 6? You murdered Robert with it.
I didn't.
You lost all control and you bludgeoned him to death. There must have been blood everywhere, but you got lucky. You were in the surgical suite. It can be sterilized. You never would have gotten away with it in your carpeted office.
That's not what happened.
Don't say anything more, Philip.
And your office manager would have heard all of the screaming, but she was at her grandson's play. Lucky again.
You're wrong.
You put Robert's body into a wheelchair and shoved it in the elevator. It's a miracle there wasn't blood everywhere.
That's not true.
Now you're in the garage with a corpse. You panicked and left your phone in your office, and you don't have your car keys, but Robert's are in his pocket, so you put him in his car and you take off.
No.
You can't believe what you've done.
No.
Philip.
You're flustered. You have no GPS, so you just start driving.
No.
Philip.
Next thing you know, you're in the Pine Barrens, and it hits you. Your uncle's cabin. He has a place there. You're the luckiest son of
a bitch. It wasn't luck.
Yes, it was. You got lucky at every turn.
No, I knew exactly where I was driving. I left my phone in the office on purpose. I was in a surgical suite by design, and I didn't use some glass award that any idiot would clearly see was missing. I made a rod out of a special dental polymer, killed him with it, then melted it back down. It's already in a patient's mouth, son.
There is simply no cop show interrogation trope we don't see in this episode, even the very stupid ones. If episode writer Luke Del Tredici set out to make every future interrogation sequence on TV feel like a retread of this episode, he succeeded. And number 3, it shows how far Jake and Holt have come. Clip 10.
There's one thing I still don't understand. Did you know you had the wrong murder weapon?
Oh, excellent question, sir. Yes. I spotted the missing dental award when I first took the case. I asked around weeks ago. Turns out a cleaning lady knocked it over and shattered it.
Then why did you run in there like that?
Because in talking to you, I realized what Philip's worst fear actually was. That we would think he was just some dummy that got lucky.
Right. He had planned the perfect crime. And it killed him when you said he was sloppy and impulsive.
He needed us to know how smart he was.
Right. Like someone else I know.
Yep. Kevin.
When Holt started at the 9-9 back in the first season, it took almost no time for Jake to outgrow his childish need to defy Holt, transitioning to a childish need for Holt to love him the way Jake's real and shitty father never could. His quasi-parental dynamic, once fixed, never really changes, but it has evolved. Now Holt can respect Jake as a colleague, if not a peer. All this and Sterling K. Brown doing his impression of when a Muppet gets mad. Vote this episode into the canon. It's the most important work of Brown's anyone will be talking about this week. And yes, I'm saying the Paradise Season finale stinks.
Thank you, Tara. Dave, why don't you take first crack at the episode and the presentation?
Frank Pembleton was like a formative TV character for me. Brower, I revered above basically any other actor that's ever been on TV. the bits in this where he is, and you can hear it some if you remember Homicide. Like, he is doing Pembleton in this, not doing Holt. Like, there's mm-hmm. bits in the box where he's, certainly the bit where he's, like, quickly contradicting Sterling K. Brown on why they're, it's harder to get into dental school and all of that stuff. That is, like, purely the way that Frank Pembleton operated. And I know I've already used the phrase clapping my flippers together, but there is just no better way to describe the delight of me doing the fucking Leo DiCaprio point at my favorite character rising from the grave and appearing on TV in a comedy setting, which was like a big part of the fun for me with Brooklyn Nine-Nine in general. It's a very funny episode. It is, like, as you said, like, comprehensive in the way that it, like, ticks off and tweaks all of the sort of tropey stuff, you know, which I love, you know, of this sort of, I guess, bottle episode in, you know, interrogation heavy shit, and the best actor that's ever been on television goofing on the best character that he ever played on television, and then also getting to do a bunch of other stuff. Sandberg is, you know, funny. Sterling K. Brown is great. Like, I have no complaints. That is it's a yes for me. I laughed a lot.
Thank you, Dave. All right, Sarah, what do you think?
I don't really have much to add. I wrote down many, many bits and pieces of dialogue. And during Tara's excellent presentation, I checked off, I think, 80% of them.
The Boggle experience. She just found every word.
Your digital squash. I mean, there was no role or no goofy shit that he would be asked to do in a given role that he felt was beneath him. Like, he absolutely painted to the edge of the canvas every second with whatever he was doing. And I think that since this is sort of like a mid-season 5 episode, and you can assume that this is a show operating at the height or close to the height of its powers, I mean, the joke density is amazing. The line jumping is amazing, but you have not just this earned moment for these two characters, but you can see how much these actors enjoy working together. Various other projects that they worked on are sort of like on the other side of the glass watching this unfold. It is extremely funny. There are definitely moments where, like, I revere Sterling K. Brown also, but you could see that he is, like, trying to also be the last one laughing. He's just like, oh my God. I would kill to have just, like, raw footage from some of those takes where, mm-hmm. like, people are whipping out notebooks. Like, I wonder, like, I just wonder when Sandberg is whipping out that notebook with such a flourish, and then there's, like, a callback to it later. Like, what angle was chosen for that, and how unfurled was it going to be? Like, you can just see them making decisions, and it really, the meta aspects of it really add to it and don't take anything away from how funny and kind of reveling in its own completeness with regard, as Tara said, to that every trope of the interrogation is going to be in here. And if you're going to do that, you need to have Brower in the room, in the box, as it were. This was a delight. The, you know, any I'm friends with Steph Curry callback is good with me. And, like, just Brower screaming about Jake's digital squash. Like, jokes like that for Holt are, I guess, super easy to write. Low-hanging squash, so to say. But you can always count on him. And you could. So, great presentation and really a fun episode. David T. Cole.
All right. I think there's two things I wanted to mention that nobody's brought up yet. The first one is where they're laying the cards out on the table for, you know, good cop, bad cop, what their dynamics in the room. Jake is going on about Holt, you know, he's the master of the interrogation. He's going to be brutal. It's going to be a bloodbath. Who is the worst criminal you've ever put away? Connie Buttons. Connie Buttons. The other one was the impromptu dental exam that happens during the interrogation.
It's too visual to clip, but
it's too visual to clip, but it's a great moment where Jake is sort of losing the battle of minds here, and he basically gets an impromptu dental exam because Sterling K. Brown's kind of wondering and a little worried about that one tooth back there. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the Mike Tyson punch out strategy session we had here.
I enjoyed that. Yep.
Little mini quiz here for David. David, how many Mike Tyson punch-out references are there on Defector.com right now?
Oh, do you know the answer?
I know the answer, yes. Oh.
So, and this is all time? This isn't like on our front page, it's zero, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, all time, using your search engine.
It's baseball season. I hope that it's like 15.
Just two.
Wow.
We got work to do. I'm working on a big feature about the real Don Flamenco, the real guy that inspired the character.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working on that for 7 years, though.
Great.
So it's not, there's no real Don Flamenco. I just wanted to shout him out.
I loved
his work. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the wrong audience. Two people were the wrong audience for that joke.
Are they both Glass Joe, Dave?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's that? One was about a guy who beat the game playing a drum controller.
Okay.
And the other one was just sort of an aside to something.
All right. Yeah. Somebody had to have been compared to Glass Joe. Anyway, nice to think about.
Nice rich pageant.
Great bottle episode. I believe that is the correct term here. Yes.
Yeah.
Basically one set, couple of characters, very cheap to do. There's a mention of the monster cereals, Count Chocula.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the, mm-hmm. What is the scariest of the monster cereal mascots? So you got Count Chocula, Frankenberry,
mm-hmm.
Boo Berry,
mm-hmm.
Fruit Brute,
yeah,
Yummy Mummy, and Carmella Creeper, which is new.
I mean, I feel like Fruit Brute is probably the most unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what his deal is necessarily.
Right.
And the lore is harder to sort of parse. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when like Count Chocula, that there's circuits. If you don't invite him in, he can't hurt you.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, that's simple. That's elementary. Whereas the Fruit Brute plays by his own rules, presumably. So you gotta... That's a terrible thing to have said. But I agree with Tara on that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Yummy Mummy. I always got a bad vibe.
Mm.
Yeah. He's always smiling too much. I would have said Count Chocolate, but then I realized I'm not sure canonically if he drinks blood or just chocolatey milk.
Right.
What his deal
chocolate
was.
Milk.
Yeah.
Weird brown cereal milk from the bottom of a bowl.
That's right. Blah. All right. Well, let's put this to the official vote. David J. Roth, what do you think about this episode? Canon worthy or not?
Hell yeah. Send it.
All right, Sarah D. Bunny.
Uh-huh.
I got to make that 3 for 3. So. That means that Brooklyn Nine-Nine Season 5, Episode 14, The Box, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
What flavor do you think Carmilla Creeper is? Because I know probably none of us here are familiar with the latest Monster Edition. It's already been discontinued.
Caramel?
Caramel. What else would it be?
It's caramel apple, I believe.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. With marshmallows. Yum. All right, let's get into it. It is time for the winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
Everyone who doesn't have to eat Carmilla Creeper cereal. But actually, it is Laura Dern, always, but specifically... She'll be playing investigative journalist Julie K. Brown of the Miami Herald in a TV series based on Brown's book, Perversion of Justice, the Jeffrey Epstein Story, and that is produced by Adam McKay. I think that's really great casting, like the Dernosity aside. I looked at a picture and was like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like it's Dern's turn for prestige true crime, which technically she has done before. I won't get into it, but Pied Piper of Tucson, ask me anything.
It's a great episode of Extra Hot Great for the K Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're coming up.
Tara, who is our loser of the week?
Our loser of the week is Andy Weir. He is the author of the book Project Hail Mary, which was just adapted for film. And he gave an interview where he basically...
Sorry. Wow.
Everybody all right?
Brains. Okay, go ahead.
Weir just gave an interview where he talked a bunch of shit about the Star Trek franchise. And unfortunately, he likes the same current contemporary shows that we do, which are Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks, and says, those shows are shit, all the other ones. I would not go that far, and I certainly wouldn't go that far if I had met with executive producer Alex Kurtzman, which Weir had, because he pitched a different Star Trek show and got rejected. So part of this is he's bitter. But the other part is like this really weird bridge to burn. And when this came out, another writer, Crime 101 author Don Winslow, tweeted at Weir, that's really not cool. And it's not. So Weir apologized, but it's probably the damage is done. I don't know. Take that idea to Lucasfilm and see how far you get with it.
Well, speaking about taking that idea and see how far you get with it, do you know what time it is?
I think it's game time.
It's finally back to regulation game time. Anybody remember what the scores were the last time we actually played a regulation game?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I think Tara has 4 and we're also here. I don't know.
The last one we played was the Muppet Shows when Adam Grossworth was here and sure. Sarah was here. So he won that one. So the scores are Tara 4, Sarah 0, value guess 1.
Oh, boy.
Today we are playing, to ease you back into it, 19 questions, Sarah's favorite.
It's not my least favorite.
But 19 questions, sports edition. Sports, 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 sports.
Yay. I get to ride up front because I'm good at sports.
You right. know it. This game comes from the team at EHG Assist. They're on Discord. They're on Blue Sky. Thank you all for your suggestions for things to guess. The rules are simple. This is 19 questions. It's a lot like 20 questions. You will take turns asking me yes or no questions. If you get a yes, you continue to ask questions. If you get a no, play moves on to the next person. And we do that until either somebody guesses it correctly or I lose my patience and go on to the next thing. We have 13 things, but we definitely will not get to them all. That is just an abundance of caution there. We'll play until I call for time. We have no Grossworth Equalizer challenges today. All right, let's throw it to Piggy to see just the play order today.
We will start with Tara.
All right, so the guessing order is going to be Tara, Sarah, David, and we'll just change up who starts each one. All right, make sense?
Yes.
Ready to go?
Yes.
All right, sure. I am going to give you your choice of starting point. I will let you know we've got animals, body parts, characters, clothing, directions, narration, organizations, shows, sports, and things. Okay. A lot of these only have one entry, but some have multiple. So at the start, we'll let you have your choice and we'll begin there to narrow it down. So start with Tara. Tara, what is your starting point choice here? What category do you want?
This feels boring given what else is on the list, but I'm going to say it anyway. Let's do character.
All right. We have only one character, so this is it.
Okay.
Give me your first question.
Is this character in a comedy?
I'm going to say yes to that.
Okay. Is this character a man?
Okay. Incorrect. All right. Over to Sarah.
Is this an animated character?
It is not an animated character. To Dave.
Did this show air on premium cable or regular old TV?
That's not a yes or no question.
Oh, wait. All right. How about... Oh, wait. Sorry. Yes, I have to do a better job.
That's right.
Did it air on fancy cable?
Fancy cable. I like that term, though.
Okay. Is this character from a network show?
Nope. Sarah D. Bunting.
Is this character a player?
A player? Oh, a player. I see. A sports performer, let's say. Sports performer? Yes. Yes.
Is the sport football?
Nope. To Dave.
Sport performer.
Yeah.
So that's like an active participant in a sporting thing.
I'm just going to say they wouldn't call the people that participate in the sport players like you would say, okay. Just to give, like in baseball, you know, as right. a baseball player, gotcha. It wouldn't be a blank player in this other sport.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Did it air during the first decade of the 21st century?
Okay. Is it from the 90s?
Is the sport cheerleading?
Ooh, good buck. Good question.
Yeah. Is it a team sport?
Team. Is it a team sport? It is not a team sport, usually.
Okay.
Oh.
I will say there is teaming up involved sometimes. So on a technicality, perhaps. But generally speaking, the spirit of the question, no.
Okay. Is the show from a streaming platform?
Yes.
Okay. Is the sport chess?
Chess.
Okay, so it's not the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, well, do you see where you're going with that?
To Sarah. That's you're not getting colder. Let me just say that. Okay, all right.
Oh, shit. But that's not a game. Well, fuck. And it's on a streaming service.
It's a comedy on a streaming service, and the player or performer is not a man.
I just don't know what to... is this character considered the best sports performer of their sport that they're performing?
I don't think so.
Not to say they're terrible, but.
All right.
It might help you.
What's up?
I said it might help you to know the streamer involved. Yeah. I'm just suggesting filters here.
But I have one more general question. Yeah. I don't know where we are in the number of questions that we've asked.
Oh, so we'd actually don't stop at 19.
Oh, good.
Nobody
right,
would
cool.
ever get any points if we stopped at 19.
Is it a winter sport?
No.
Okay, is it from Netflix?
Yes.
Okay, is it from the teens, the 20 teens?
Yes.
Okay. I'll use my privilege and ask, did I watch this show?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Damn it!
I'm not going to give you that advantage.
Okay. Did Generally you watch this show?
Nice try.
Okay.
You're on thin ice, counselor.
All right, as long as everyone acknowledges. Okay. Was it on for more than one season?
Yes.
Is the show Glow?
Yes.
Ah.
Is the character Ruth?
Yep.
Okay.
Sir, anybody can come into the steal here.
Oh, shit. Yes, I could. Is the character played by Betty Gilpin?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't remember the characters from Glow well enough. The only one that's left.
This is going to be difficult for you.
A non-athlete, non-female character in it.
It's not Marc Maron.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this character not Marc Maron?
Yes, it is.
All right, cool. Good. Right, ring the
another
bell.
Question.
I just
now you have to come up with another question.
Yeah. All right.
Do you know the names of the characters at Glow?
I will also accept from you, David, just paint a picture.
Is
as
it
well.
The one whose his gimmick is blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, all right. So we've established that it is not Alison Brie or Betty Gilpin.
Right.
Other characters in the show. There is, we watched like two episodes of this shit. I know you guys love it, and apparently it's
How dare you?
But
it's great.
All right, we gotta move on.
Get me out of here.
Okay, is the character white?
Yes.
Is it Sheila the She-Wolf?
It is Sheila the She-Wolf, yes. Our first point is on the board. Tara gets it. Okay, we move to Sarah D. Bunting for category choice. Character is off the board now.
All right, I gotta go body part.
Body part, we have one body part for you today. So please ask your first question. We'll see how long it takes to get there.
All right. Is this an animated body part?
Yes.
Ooh. Is this body part on Futurama?
All right, to Dave.
Is this body part on a male-coded character?
Yes.
Okay. Is this body part used for throwing things?
No.
That's pretty clever with that, I thought.
Yeah, that was good.
Is this from The Simpsons?
Yes.
Is it Homer's brain with a crayon in it?
No. To Sarah.
Oh, God. Is the sport baseball?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't actually help me.
I may have got it.
And while Sarah's vamping, last one came from Jesse. Sheila, and this one comes from Johnny S.A.
All right.
Oh, thanks, Johnny. I mean, I had this on my like short list of possibles, but then I don't know where a body part would fit in. And it's not Nixon's head. Does the body part belong to a real player who existed?
Yes.
Fuck. A lot of questions.
I definitely know it then, I think.
Is Don Mattingly involved in this conversation?
Oh,
yes.
This is where I thought I had this one too.
Oh.
Sarah's so close. Can she clinch it?
I went the wrong way.
Yep.
Is it
Don No, but when I say body part, I'm being generous, just so you know.
Yeah.
It's on the body. It's
part
a part
of his
body.
Yes.
But if you ask, is it his arm, I would have to say no.
Right.
It does not really help me. Is it Don Mattingly's back?
All right, to David J. Roth.
David knows.
Wow. All right. Is it Don Mattingly's sideburns?
Yes.
Oh,
it's Don Mattingly's sideburns, which Mr. Burns really wants him to shave off.
Yep.
I was sure it was Ken Griffey's grotesque swollen
body. Yes. Those are the other two.
Somebody said we had about four suggestions from that episode, so I had to pick one. That's the one I went with. But
yeah, sure.
Rest assured, giant head was there. Okay, we're starting with Dave. David, what is your choice here? Character, body part, off the board.
All right, I will do an organization.
Organization, there is one. Hit me with your first question.
Is this a professional sports organization?
Yes.
Does it appear on a show that is currently airing?
No.
Okay.
Is it a fictional professional sports organization?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I thought I had it, but currently airing meaning, is it?
It's not currently airing.
Right, no, but do we know if it's coming back for another season or it's just, it is canceled?
Give me your question.
Okay. It's confirmed that it's not Running Point and we can move on. Is it about Running Point?
Thank you. Okay. I just wanted to, that question that you had loaded up there was fine. I just wanted
to. No. But that's where I was going with it. Okay. So. That's fine.
Okay. I had the same question. So
it's actually also where I was going with it.
Okay, great. So.
Well, I forget what the fake NBA is called in that show. I think it's the ABL or something.
Anyway, yeah.
Go ahead, right, Sarah.
Sarah Bunny.
Did it air on a network?
Yes.
Was it about baseball?
Yes.
Was it Pitch?
Was not Pitch.
Pitch was the one that was the A's, Mark Paul Gosselaar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the A's are a complicated one because it's like, they're kind of a real organization now, but they don't play in Oakland anymore. They've struck out more than a third of their at-bats so far this season. There's a lot there to talk about. All right. So we've established that it's baseball and that it's on cable.
Baseball, that is a fictional professional team.
And it was on network television.
Network television. Right. Correct.
Is there a Bad News Bears TV show? Was it the Bad News Bears?
There was a TV show.
Okay, I thought there was.
Is the show this fictional team is on a comedy?
No. Okay. Sarah.
Oh my god. Was Dennis Franz on this show?
No.
This seems like something that I should have known about or would have known.
Pretty
about.
Sure everybody's probably watched this. I know Sarah has for sure, and I know Tara has for sure.
Network show baseball no longer on.
Correct. The reason I asked for clarification from Tara is that she almost asked a good question and then she changed it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Didn't realize we were getting performance reviews today.
Well, you are. And you're failing.
No.
All right, Dave.
And the show is over? We said that? We established
as
much?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. God damn it. All right. I was going to say the Isotopes of Springfield. That is. All right.
I'm not repeating TV shows here. All right, ask your question, Dave.
Yeah, I got to do it. All right. Did we ask if it's a professional team? We've established as much.
It's professional in universe, but it is also fictional.
Do they play in Los Angeles?
No. All right, top.
Is the show from the 90s?
Yes.
Okay, a network show from the 90s with a Okay, is the show mainly about the team or is the team just something that happens in the course? Is the show mainly about the team?
No.
Is the show The X-Files?
Show is The X-Files.
Yay!
Oh, wow.
Okay, but then what organization is the show the famous one with Jesse L. Martin? The episode. Is it from that episode?
Correct. That is called The Unnatural.
Yes, of course.
You submitted it for the canon.
That's why I knew you watched it. Okay, it is a organization from that. And keep in mind what an organization could mean. It could also mean something as simple as the team.
Sure.
Yeah, but I don't remember the...
When you hear it. If you don't remember it, when you hear it, you're going to hate yourself.
Yeah, probably. But it's game time. I'm always hating myself. Is the organization the Federal Bureau of Investigation?
All right, David J. Roth, have you watched this episode?
I feel like I have, but I don't. Is it is it the Monsters baseball team?
You're getting closer. Right,
is it like the Roswell aliens or something?
Ooh, close, but no. Back to Sarah.
Back to me.
I'll let you know. I'm going to say it. This is not yes or no information.
I just got it.
But the first part was correct. It's the Roswell somethings.
Yeah, I did think I just got it.
All right, we'll see if Plake circles back to you.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting looking for the team name from the X-Files episode The Unnaturals, Roswell Blank.
I don't remember. I've presented this episode in so many different formats, too. What a shame.
Can I tell Sarah what I think it is?
What? No, it'll come back.
Is it the Monarchs?
Dave's like, I don't want... What?
What about me? I'm here. I'm on the Zoom call.
All right.
Can you guys see me?
She said the Monarchs.
Sorry. No. All right, Dave.
So I feel like there either is now or was a team called the Roswell 51s. Is it the 51s?
That is... Isn't that the team from... isn't that the bar from Resident Alien?
Yes.
All right,
is it the Roswell Grays?
The Roswell Grays, okay. Yes.
It's going to be Grays or Elite Giants. But...
Ooh. All right. Back to Tara.
They are now the Roswell Invaders. There was a team called the 51s that played in... And the Roswell Rockets? I don't know.
They still have the isotopes, right? In Albuquerque?
Yeah, in Albuquerque, yeah.
All right. Organization's off the board. Tara.
Okay.
Well, we can get through a couple more, so let's try to have our questions loaded up.
Okay, how about clothing?
Clothing, all right. I've got two here, both from Millsnack.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I'm going to go with, all right, I've locked in. Tara, first question.
Is this from a comedy?
Comedy, no. Sarah?
Is this from a network show?
Yes.
Is it a uniform element?
Yes.
Is the sport baseball? Not that this ever fucking helps me. Okay. Is this pitch?
It is not to Mr. Roth.
Does it correspond to a team that exists in real life?
Yes.
Is it a hat?
Yes.
I think I got it.
Is it Magnum's Detroit Tigers hat?
Yes, it is.
Hell yeah. Yes.
Wow. All right. Gorgeous.
That's what
super.
I thought too.
Nice.
Good job.
My All brain right. went down a Seinfeld rabbit hole. Yeah.
That's
well done.
The problem, there's too much in there. It's for me, it's basically empty. There's plenty of room to stretch out.
All right.
So Sarah Bunting, you get to choose the next one. We've got animal, clothing, direction, narration, show, sport, or thing.
Let's go narration.
All right, narration, the one and only narration. Hit me with your first question.
Is the narrator male-coded?
Yes.
Did this take place on a network program?
Yes.
Is the narration taking place in, quote, present day about flashbacks? I don't know if that makes sense. No. Okay.
Is the narration concerning the actions of a professional sports team?
No.
Is the show from the 90s?
Modem, please. I think the answer is no, but I just want to double check.
Okay.
I can give you a yes on that one.
Okay, but it sounds like it didn't necessarily start in the 90s or end in the 90s. Or is part props? Was it straddling another decade?
Yes.
Was the other decade the 80s?
It was one of the decades. I don't know how to answer that definitively the way you phrase it,
okay.
So I'll give you a little bonus there.
Did it also straddle the 70s? Were there more decades that it straddled or just those?
Yes.
More decades. Okay. Is this narration still happening in our time? Okay.
Incorrect. Sarah.
Is it the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat?
It is, yes. Sports. From Wide World of Sports, 1961 to 1997, apparently.
Shit.
Damn.
I would have thought that ended in the 80s, but it went.
Thank you, Tara, for being like, how many decades is it in? I was like, oh.
That was having a panicking effect on me, where I was kind of like, it's the most popular TV show ever aired. It's about sports, and you don't know what it is. I know what it is.
I've heard. Yeah.
I could not get
Wide
Mel
World
Allen's. How about that?
The sphere is falling. I know.
All right, scores, please.
David and I are tied with 2 points each. Sarah has one.
All right, and this is to David then, and that's off the board now. Narration's off. So. I can give you animal. Another clothing, direction, a show itself, sport itself, or thing. A thing. We got three things still in the offering here.
Hmm.
So an object kind of thing.
Thing is dauntingly vague.
I know.
fuck me up. Let's do it. Give me a thing.
Good time for things.
All right.
Yeah.
Got a lot of things.
Thing me.
Thing one, two, or three, just so I don't stack
thing
the deck.
Two.
Two. Okay.
Oh, thank you. All right,
give me your first question, please.
Is it alive?
It is alive.
No, wait, it's dead?
It's just
did you
not
say
alive.
It is alive?
Is it alive?
Is it alive?
It is not alive.
It's not alive.
Yep, good to know. All right.
I did not say it was dead. I just said it was not alive.
Was it ever alive?
Okay. All right, Sarah.
I felt like just needed to establish that.
Okay, no, thank you for that.
Is it a ball?
Not a ball.
Okay.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
There you go.
Looking at a bread box. I'm going to say... possibly on one dimension, so I'm going to give it to you.
Right. Okay, I see.
All right.
Like the footprint, I think, would be slightly sticking out, maybe.
Okay.
Okay. Is it a tool?
Is it a tool? It's not a tool. No.
All right.
Without repeating things that I've privileged, is it something that we have in this house?
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that.
Okay. Is it something you could buy in a store?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a yes, but okay. You know, I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Okay.
Technically, yes.
All right. Let's try to figure out the show. Is it from a comedy?
No. Sir.
Is it a sign?
Yeah, I would say a sign-ish.
Ooh.
Oh. Is it the thing they slap on the way out of the locker room in Friday Night Lights?
It is not.
Good guess, though.
I do like that. All right. Kind of a sign.
Kind of a sign.
Fairly large. It's in a non-comedy, just resetting. The show in which it appears, is it currently airing?
It is not currently airing. All right, Katara.
Okay, I don't know why I'm keep going back to this one, but is it from the 90s, the show?
It is not. Sarah.
Okay.
So it's not from like live sporting coverage.
Is it? Not from live sporting coverage.
Is it, okay, let me rephrase. Is this from live sport coverage? Pass.
Can you just give me an example? Because I just want to make sure
is
I answer.
Is it John 316 guy from golf?
You don't have to be like, really, it's not, but I just wanted to get a sense of what you meant by that question.
Like, is it a scripted show it, or not?
Is
sort
it,
of thing.
Is, right. Does the object belong to a... real
Would
life
the
sports?
Object have been seen in live sports coverage
okay.
of
probably
say,
yes
oh okay.
It definitely could is have existed John? In a television broadcast of this sport yeah
okay
is it John 316
it is not
guy?
But I love that like, that should have been
that
one
is
of
a really
clues.
Good really yeah. good
is it the rainbow wig worn by the man holding the John 316 sign
a failure in our part but it's not
sorry
fuck well I mean I feel like I'm totally at sea. Is it a sign from that someone held at a wrestling event?
It's not. I'm going to give another clue. The question that got closest to the heart of this was actually Dave Roth's first question about it being alive or not.
Oh.
In a weird way.
Okay.
Okay. I just want to put that out there. Hmm. Also, I know at least two of the three people on this call have had this object in their house at some point. Okay, go.
Oh, then it's not me. Oh, wait. I think I may have got it.
Okay. Whose turn is it here?
Sarah.
Okay, Sarah.
Really? I just
I'm pretty
asked.
Sure you have this in your apartment home right now.
Mine?
Probably. Huh. I believe so.
Yeah, I just went because I asked if it was from wrestling. So it's back to you.
And again, it's not a sign proper. It definitely belongs in the sign family, though.
Mm-hmm.
Belongs in the sign
yeah.
family. Jesus. is it a pennant?
It is.
Yeah.
Is it Lane Price's Mets pennant?
That's why. Dave's question.
Wow.
It was Oogie so close.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, it was Lane's Mets pennant from Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. You've had it in your home?
Well, not the exact one, but I
oh,
have
all right.
I
no.
bought a similar one at a to give to Sarah, so it's yeah, been that, in both our houses.
They're both in this office. You can't see them.
Fantastic. But that's fine.
Many, many vintage right. Mets.
Right, we go.
We're
time
all
for one
tied
more.
Up.
Okay, that's great. So let's just do one more, and I'm going to pick it.
Okay.
And it's going to be direction.
Duh.
So okay. The category is a direction. Up, down, left, right, Z-axis, con, don't know it, that kind of thing.
Okay.
All right, so that was... So we're back to Tara, then, for first guess.
Is this direction from a comedy?
Yes.
Okay. From today, current comedy?
Sarah.
Is the direction eastbound and down?
God, ooh, wow.
I love that you went for it.
Yeah.
Then I'm out.
And we've established that it's, we've established it's from a comedy.
That's right. Comedy, and it is not currently.
And not currently airing.
Yeah, okay. A concern.
Is it a network show?
It is.
Okay. Does it have to do with the sport of baseball?
Yes. Lots of baseball stuff here.
Okay. Network, baseball, comedy. Did the show air during the first decade, from 2000 to 2010, the aughts?
Is it from Seinfeld?
No.
Is it the... Is it... I can't remember exactly what had happened, but was it waving someone in so that Kramer ran into Bette Midler? Or someone did? Okay.
Sarah.
It's a direction.
It's a direction.
Oh, I just got it! Fuck.
This one comes from me, by the way.
Yeah.
Roswell Gray's from Erica. Agony of Defeat from Steel Mill Eric.
Nice.
And Millsnack brought us Tiger's Hat. All right, Sarah. It's a direction. We know it's about baseball.
You know it's from Seinfeld.
You know it's from Seinfeld.
Yeah, but that does not...
It's a direction.
That does not help me, because now I'm set at like directions like, you know, giving
to the
direction.
Coffee shop.
Yeah.
No, it is not map directions. It is like...
Yeah, you got to buzz me because I'm just blanking.
All right. So.
Different. I think David's goes. Got it.
I'm not remembering all of this perfectly, so there's a chance that I'm getting the goof wrong, but I'm assuming that this is the like second spitter back and to the left Roger McDowell shit. Is that correct?
You are correct. Back and to the left is the JFK loogie trajectory.
Yes!
Shit, that's right.
Good job.
All right. Well done.
That is well done. Regulation. Woo! I need them final scores, please.
Sarah and I tied with 2 points each. David is our victor with 3.
Oh, my God.
Stupid.
Wow.
Valued guest.
Nicely done.
Unbelievable.
Here's some ones we couldn't get to. I'm going to let Sarah do this one very quickly. If I give you the category, surprise animal sports. Oh, look, it's a surprise animal. And it has something to do with a sports ball.
Oh, is it the giraffe?
No, it's not. It's the monkey from Inside the Basketball from
Line Art.
Well, that could have been for David, too. He pitched that one.
That's fan service. Yeah. That was me.
We had Sports Shouting from 30 Rock.
Nice.
We had Blurn's Ball from Futurama. We had the football that smashes Marsha's face from Brady Bunch.
Oh, yeah.
And we had Cisco's baseball from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, Sports Shouting comes back on the Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins, by the way.
That's right.
It's, continues in franchise.
Which is funny so far.
It got better after the first two.
Yep. All right, guys, that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Grade. We rovered around the fifth season of Space Show, a.k.a. For All Mankind, before going around the dial with stops at Saturday Night Live UK, Color Theories, DTF St. Louis, The Lowdown, and Last One Laughing UK. Tara browbeat us into putting Brooklyn Nine-Nine's The Box into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Mr. David J. Roth was a winner of this week's Game Time from the @EHG Assist team. Next up, it's Dear Killer Nannies. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
me want to, Gum Cop,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Governor of Bullshit,
and David J. Roth,
sons of bitches.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grit.
You really didn't find any usable forensic evidence?
The body was discovered rotting in the Pine Barrens. It had been rained on for weeks and chewed up by coyotes. The only other DNA other than the Vicks was some bear semen found in the hair.
Right. Who found the body?
Hikers. You're really gonna just blow past the bear semen detail?
I imagine a bear mistook the rotting corpse for a female of its species and had intercourse with it. Nothing I haven't seen before.
It isn't?